When the yogi regularly practices in this way, in a short time his heart becomes fixed and free from disturbance, like a fire without flames or smoke. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Nirvana means the cessation of all material desires. Sometimes desirelessness is understood to imply an end to the workings of the mind, but this is not possible. The living entity has senses, and if the senses stop working, the living entity would no longer be a living entity. He would be exactly like stone or wood. This is not possible. Because he is living, he is Nitya and Chaitana, eternally sentient. For those who are not very advanced, the practice of yoga is recommended in order to stop the mind from being agitated by material desires. But if one fixes his mind on the lotus feet of Krishna, his mind naturally becomes peaceful very soon. This peace is described in the Bhagavad Gita 5.29. Bhaktaram yagya tapasam savaloka maheswaram surita sabhabhutanam gatvamam santimrishti. If one can understand Krishna as the supreme enjoyer, the supreme proprietor of everything, and the supreme friend of everyone, one is established in peace and is free from material agitation. However, for one who cannot understand the supreme personality of Godhead, the practice of yoga is recommended. Om Magana Timurandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksurum Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Sri Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityanamane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nivisesha Sunyavadi Pastacha Deshitarane Vancha Kalpataribhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyeh Vacha Patitanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. When the yogi regularly practices in this way, in a short time, his heart becomes fixed and free from disturbance, like a fire without flames or smoke. So this is the last chapter in the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Narada Muni's been speaking to King Yudhisthira. In the previous chapter, he's been explaining about the importance of the brahmanas in society. And in this chapter, he goes on to explain different kinds of brahmanas in different modes of nature. And just in the previous past couple of verses, he's begun to explain the yoga system. And he's suggesting to King Yudhisthira that, you know, one should go to perform yoga. And it's very much like when Krishna's speaking to Arjuna in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the Jnana Yoga, it's practically the same. He's telling him to go and sit somewhere not too high and not too low, and sit with body straight, chant Om. And quite a technical explanation of the yoga practice. Prabhupada's picked up in the purport here on this word Nirvana. Nirvana means the cessation of all material desires. And he says that sometimes desirelessness is understood to imply an end to the workings of the mind, but this isn't possible because the living entity is Nitya and Chaitana. The living entity is eternally sentient. So, therefore, the yoga practice is advised as something that can keep the mind, keep the senses out of trouble. It's some kind of engagement for the mind and the senses. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Shri Shri Gaurinitai Ki Jai. However, as always, Srila Prabhupada in his purport is pointing towards that better than this system of Ashtanga yoga is the practice of bhakti yoga. Because in bhakti yoga, the senses are given some higher engagement. We all know this, Rishikena, Rishikesha, Sevanam Bhakti Uchate. The bhakti means engaging the senses in the service of the master of the senses. And again, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada's referring to this verse that is the peace process. Because here in the verse, the yogi's heart has attained some kind of peace. It's like a fire without flames or without smoke. Prabhupada's referring to that verse known as the peace formula in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhaktaram Yagyatapasam. Understanding Krishna as the supreme enjoyer, the supreme proprietor, and the supreme friend. Because what happens when we begin to understand these things, Krishna is a supreme enjoyer, then we no longer think of ourselves that we're the supreme enjoyer, that we're the ones that can enjoy everything. It becomes turned around. Krishna's the supreme proprietor. So, again, we give up thinking that we are the controller, we are the enjoyer. And Krishna's the supreme friend. So in that peace formula, just that thought of thinking, Krishna's our supreme friend. What a thought, especially for the heart of the devotee, just to remember. Sometimes we forget Krishna's our friend. You know, how are we relating to Krishna in our devotional practice? You know, what is our relationship with Krishna? How do we relate to the deity in the temple? Is it in an impersonal kind of fashion? Or, you know, are we really coming before Krishna and experiencing a relationship of the heart, experiencing some kind of reciprocal exchange with the Lord? And is that something we're trying to cultivate in our sadhana? Now, we understand from the philosophy that there are these different rasas that can be cultivated and attained through the process of devotional service. So, what is that process? That in the beginning one becomes the servant of Krishna. And by serving Krishna, gradually everything becomes revealed. In Gita again, Krishna is explaining Tesam Satatam Yuktanam Bhajatam Prichipurvakam Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yinamam Apiyantite. That to those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. So, like this, remembering Krishna as our ever well-wishing friend. But sometimes we may feel that Krishna is actually far away from us. We might not experience that. Or we may have the desire, but, you know, what in reality are we experiencing in our relationship with Krishna? You know, when we come to take darshan, is Krishna reciprocating with us? Is Krishna appearing in our dreams? Or the examples are there from our previous acharyas of the type of relationship that is possible with Krishna, and we can take much inspiration from these examples. And also, if we have any kind of doubt that, you know, is this philosophy something tangible, something real, just study the lives of the previous acharyas. And even in the more recent past, I was just reading the beautiful book by Madhavananda about the life and teachings of Gaur Govinda Swami, When Good Fortune Arises. And amazing life story, an amazing Vaishnav. And there's much in there about the kind of personal dealings and reciprocations that Gaur Govinda Swami had with his own personal deity, Gopalji. I don't know if any of you read that book also. It's a beautiful book. And it's just incredible to see the relationship between the Lord and his devotee. There's one bit particularly struck me, because when Gaur Govinda Swami grew up, he was living in a village and his village deity was Gopalji. And he was, you know, practically like a Shakti Vaishavatar. Reading his story, you can see he's a very elevated devotee since birth. So he was seeking out a guru like Srila Prabhupada, someone who was teaching the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. He was seeking him out, and he surrendered to Prabhupada and followed Prabhupada's instructions and built a temple in Bhubaneswar. And when he was there, then eventually they got some deities made to perform this worship, Radha Gopinath, I believe. Then one night, Gaur Govinda Swami was sleeping or resting, and his village deity, Gopalji, appeared to him, and he said, "Is this you worshipping this Radha Govinda? You think he's as good as me?" So this is Krishna. It's sort of amazing that this is how Krishna manifests in all these different forms, and the relationship is very personal and very reciprocal. And the story goes on to explain how after Gopalji had appeared to him, he went back to the pujari that's looking after Gopalji and then appeared to him the same night and told him, "Okay, you make the arrangement to hand me over to Gaur Govinda Swami." Because before then, there'd been some talk around it, but he could never actually do it. They were so attached to this deity, they couldn't hand it over. And so the next day, or whenever they discussed, and they said, "Oh, what time did he come and speak to you?" And it's like 2:30. "Oh yes, he came to me at 2 o'clock. So it's such a amazing kind of leela. But so we may not be on that platform, certainly I'm not on that platform, but hearing of such things is inspiring, and we can be and should be performing our sadhana with that kind of desire, that motivation in mind, to attain that kind of taste, that kind of rati, and that relationship with the Lord. Then our sadhana is a process which is taking us towards that, and we feel motivated in doing our sadhana. It's not just something we're doing to get done. We're doing it because we want to experience that relationship with Krishna. So the whole process of devotional service is explained as well. And there's a difference between this process and the process that's described here, the yoga process. Because in the yoga process, the whole endeavor is dependent entirely on our own endeavor. Whereas the difference between that and the practice of bhakti yoga is the endeavor is there, but the whole endeavor is to acquire the mercy of the Lord. So the process is explained, and where we find ourselves in the process now, we're in the association of the devotees. We're beginning the process of bhajana kriya, practicing the sadhana. And then some of us are initiated, some of us are working towards that, and that relationship, that connection with the spiritual master, that connection which connects us up with the parampara to Krishna. And at that stage, it said, like, we're given the seed of devotional service. So the process of devotional service is watering that seed and paying careful attention to that watering process, recognizing the value of what we've been given in the seed of devotional service. And then the whole process is like a process of transformation, because a seed is not yet a beautiful flower or a beautiful fruit. It's just that sort of, you may look at that, it's like, it's nothing much. But the importance is understanding the value and the potential of that seed, if watered and nurtured for, can grow into a beautiful tree that has beautiful flowers and fruits. So the whole process of our sadhana is that careful watering through the hearing and chanting process and moving through the anatta nivritti, weeding out the garden. Now, you know, any gardener can, you know, weed his garden, get it looking quite nice, but it's not only done once. Without paying attention, the weeds begin to sprout up again. So it's constantly paying attention and looking for these weeds. Where are they in our devotional service? And looking for where they are in us, not looking for where they are in other people, which is our tendency. Because otherwise, if we're not paying attention to do this, then actually, whilst we're performing our sadhana, if we're not paying attention to uproot the weeds, then the strength of our chanting is actually watering the weeds. It's also giving strength to those weeds, and those weeds can grow, and if we're not paying attention, they'll strangle the little creeper of devotional service, and our devotional service becomes spoiled. So like that, this analogy of the gardens is very nice, just paying careful attention to try and grow a beautiful garden. And as we're growing that creeper, sometimes we can begin to, yeah, that's nice. Spend a little time in the garden of the heart with Krishna. As the creeper's growing, this is the whole process. So we've been given that mercy by the spiritual master, being given that seed, then the spiritual master wants to see what have we done with it? What are we doing with that seed? You know, did we take good care of it? There's no purpose in constantly going to the guru, the Vaishnavas, give me mercy. That mercy's already been given. So the spiritual master wants to see, you know, what are you doing with that mercy? And when the spiritual master sees that you're practicing through your endeavor, you're coming up to the platform of the mode of goodness, then there's the question of the creeper developing into something beautiful, nice fruit, a nice flower that can then be offered at the lotus feet of Krishna. Then at this stage comes that attachment, that taste, and we're fixed in our devotional service. Yes, so process is there given, Srinvata Swakata Krishna Punya Sravana Kirtana, that it's actually Krishna in our hearts who's cleaning our hearts through our endeavor. When Krishna sees we've developed that eagerness for hearing and chanting about him, he's the one in our hearts doing the cleaning. Then the rest of those seed verses, Nasta Praishu Abhadeshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Sloki Bhakti Bhavati Naistiki. By regularly attending and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, and by rendering service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome in the heart becomes practically destroyed. So this is our process, just like in today's verse, the yogi's got his process, and his heart has become free from disturbance, like a fire without flames or smoke. So in the process of bhakti, that is how our heart is becoming free from disturbance, through serving the devotees and developing that taste for hearing and chanting, then engaging in that process. When Krishna sees that, then Krishna himself is cleaning the heart. So it's not ourselves that's doing it. All we're doing is endeavoring to receive the mercy by which we can attain Krishna's mercy and Krishna can purify our heart. So this stage that's explained in today's verse, this nirvana, this is also desirable. This is the stage of Brahma-Bhuta. And Krishna explains in Gita, Brahma-Bhuta prasanatma na sochati na kansati samasavi subhutesu bhaktim labhate param. That, what is the verse again? Bhaktaram yagatapasam. No, what's the translation? Sorry. Yeah, go on. Yeah, okay. So it once comes to the platform of Brahman, and then at this stage, that is when devotional service begins. So Prabhupada's given us this opportunity to engage directly on the platform of devotional service. And if we practice that devotional service purely, then we're already on that perfected platform. Now for the yogis or the impersonalists, that Brahma Nirvana, that's perfection for them. But for the devotee, that's just the beginning, that we're on that liberated platform. And that is when actual devotional service begins, when we're serving the Lord through purified senses. Now in the purport of that verse, 1854, I think it is, Prabhupada explains how this is possible, how this is attainable, and that it's attainable through the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Now, sometimes we might read a statement like that and think, okay, the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. So, you know, what is the mercy of Lord Chaitanya? Is it some obscure thing, you know? Do I just believe in the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and the mercy of Lord Chaitanya will descend and I will come to the liberated platform, you know? Just believe. Is that what the mercy is? I'm not sure if it is, otherwise we might as well be sitting here saying, just believe in the mercy of Jesus Christ and all your sins will be forgiven. Now, what the mercy of Lord Chaitanya is the process that he has given for this age, which is Yuga Dharma, the congregational chanting of the holy names of Krishna. So it's through that process that we can attain that mercy. So, you know, what a beautiful and joyous process also. I mean, there are many different processes given for performance of devotional service, and one can perform according to what one's taste. If one has developed a particular taste for a particular form of devotional service, then that is encouraged. That one spends one time performing that service if they have taste and attraction for it. One can absorb oneself. Yet, still the Yuga Dharma is the Yuga Dharma. This is what Lord Chaitanya has given, that this is a process for self-realization for this age, congregational chanting of the holy names. And it's a wonderful opportunity you have when you're living in the temple, that the opportunity is there to do that every day, to come together and chant the holy names, glorify Krishna for the pleasure of the deities. So, you know, if there's one point I'd like to encourage devotees on today, is just to take every advantage of that opportunity whilst you're living in the temple, because there's nothing in terms of the day-to-day practice of our devotional service that is as powerful as when we come together and congregationally chant the holy names. There's nothing that on a day-to-day basis, when we really absorb ourselves in that chanting and dancing, that can really raise the vibration of our consciousness. So when we go out to share Krishna consciousness with others, it's, you know, it has some powerful, has some potent effect. And it's also very joyful. If we're developing proper relationships with each other, it's very joyful when we come together and reciprocate with each other, chanting and dancing, and Krishna sees. You know, Krishna gets to see the devotees chanting and dancing and smiling together. Now, the important thing is to never lose the focus that it's for the pleasure of the deities. It's not primarily for our pleasure. And when that focus, that proper intention is there, that we're performing the kirtan for our purification, for the glorification of Krishna, then the natural consequence is that we receive that pleasure. It's natural, and we, you know, very quickly, even if we're totally unqualified, we get to taste that transcendental taste, that transcendental nectar. So this is a point that we taste this nectar, and then we can distribute that nectar to others also. So sometimes we're not tasting that nectar. So why is that? Lord Chaitanya gave some very simple instructions. He said, chant the holy names and do not criticize others. Just two very simple things. Two very simple instructions. If we can just follow these two very simple instructions, we can make tremendous spiritual advancement. Chanting the holy names and do not criticize others. So that means not criticizing anybody. What to speak of devotees, that we don't criticize anybody. So naturally, if we have the proper mood of a devotee, then we should be free from that propensity to find fault and criticize others. Because devotee means humble, means feeling oneself to be meek and humble. And if one feels oneself to be meek and humble and sees one's own faults, one's own shortcomings, then naturally that propensity to want to find fault with and criticize others won't be there. And so that is also given as one of the six symptoms of surrender, to feel oneself meek and humble. Does anyone know any of the other symptoms of surrender to Krishna? Sorry? To act for Krishna's benefit. They're given, Prabhupada states them slightly in slightly different ways in different places, but the essence is the same. Anyone else know any other? Srinivas Prabhu?
To be meek and humble.
Yeah, to be meek and humble, Ananda Chaitanya. Yes, very good. Yes. Very nice. And Krishna protect and maintain. Yeah. So these are some really wonderful principles to remember. And I like it when I go to visit Soho Temple. If anyone's noticed, as you come down the stairs, on the top of the stairs there is, I think it's a letter from Prabhupada in which he explains the six symptoms of surrender. And I don't know about you, but when I go into London, I find the energy is so heavy. I really bow down to the devotees that stay at Soho Temple, because I never stayed one night there in all my brahmachari life. The energy is so intense, and we're very fortunate to, you know, have Bhaktivedanta Manor, which is a little bit more of a kind of peaceful sanctuary to practice spiritual life. But nonetheless, I like to come down the stairs, and just as a beautiful meditation, and just to remember that as you go out of the door of the oasis of the spiritual temple and into the world, that, okay, yeah, Krishna will protect me. He will maintain me. And yeah, it's nice, very wonderful. Yeah, so I think we more or less got all the qualities there. One place I was looking, Prabhupada said, to count oneself as one of the servants of Krishna. So, what can enhance our devotional service is if we're very much endeavoring to cultivate these virtuous qualities of a devotee. We've heard many, many times, Trinadapi Sunichina, Tarodapi Suhisnina, Manina, Manadina, Kitanya, Siddhahari, Jai, Shishi, Radhika, Kulananda, Sitaram, Laksman, Hanuman, Shishi, Kornita, Ikijai. So we've heard this verse many times. One should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. Now, we should understand that this is a very exalted state of consciousness, to be feeling oneself as lower than the straw in the street. Now, for some of us who are just nobodies, it might not be such a difficult endeavor because, you know, we've got nothing to be proud of anyway, you know, so to be humble is not such a great thing. But for others of us, and it's wonderful to see now that in the ashram there are many qualified devotees, you know, you've studied, got nice degrees, and, you know, could have been doing successful things in the world, but however, endeavoring to practice the process of Krishna consciousness very strictly. So, you know, sometimes to be qualified can, you know, can lead to the tendency to be proud, but devotee is always very careful of that. But then, if a devotee who's qualified has that humility, you know, part of being humble means you've got something to be humble about. You know, otherwise it's, you know, like that. If, you know, however, it's also said a pauper can be proud of his penny. So tendency is always there to become proud. But, you know, if someone is actually very great and they practice and show the virtue of humility, then that's a very great thing. So how to feel oneself humble is by remembering that also, you know, even if we came with nothing into Krishna consciousness, sometimes by practicing the practice of devotional service, we begin to develop some bhakti shakti. Then at that time, tendency is also, oh yes, you know, feel, yeah, you know, I've got some shakti now. So again, warding, careful, being careful in the garden, pulling out those weeds if we see them, and just remembering, just having the consciousness that whatever good things come is only by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, and whatever abilities we have in devotional service, these are through the mercy of Guru and through the mercy of Krishna, and we are only the instrument. We're just the instrument. So why should we be proud? We're just the instrument through which Krishna is working. But then one may also think, yes, but I'm such a wonderful instrument. So, you know, the trappings are always there, so it requires this constant vigilance to always just be weeding that out. And one thing that can also help with that is to understand, okay, in just the instrument, Krishna is just working through me, Guru is just working through me. But, you know, even if Krishna is working through us, Krishna can work through anybody. You know, Krishna's supremely independent and he can work through anybody. And part of humility is being able to recognize and respect and honor that when we see that the Lord is working through any other person. And having that degree of respect and humility will also help forward whatever endeavors we are trying to do in the world to relate Krishna consciousness to other people. Because we're living in a very interesting time in the world at the moment. There is an awakening of consciousness going on. And there are many other people besides devotees that are doing wonderful work to elevate people's consciousness. And Prabhupada doesn't discourage it in the verse here. He says if one cannot understand Krishna, then do the yoga practice. So through yoga, through other, there are other people who are very devotional. They may not be followers of Lord Chaitanya, but they're very devotional. They're cultivating the kind of qualities that makes one dear to the Lord, and the Lord is working through them. And they're having incredible effects on people's hearts and being empowered in wonderful ways. So as devotees, we should also be able to appreciate that, and that is part of that humility, part of that culture of respect, which is different from, because again, the tendency sometimes comes to have this kind of spiritual arrogance that we're devotees and we're the best and we've got the highest philosophy. But, that kind of attitude isn't going to win over anybody's heart. Now, Srila Prabhupada may have sometimes had that kind of spiritual arrogance around him in his preaching, but we have to understand who Srila Prabhupada is. Srila Prabhupada is the ambassador from the spiritual world. So Prabhupada can do that, but we can't do that. So even Prabhupada's mood, actually, when he came to the West, just remembering that and his prayers, that, he's also extremely humble, that, my Lord, I am just a puppet in your hands. And if you come here to make me dance, then make me dance, Lord, make me dance. So this should also be our mood, that just being the puppet of Krishna, and that Krishna makes us dance. So if we come together in kirtan and dance for Krishna in the kirtan, then Krishna will reciprocate and make us dance too in the world and affect other people's hearts. Just a few more minutes, just on that culture of developing qualities also, along with the humility and the respect, and within the community, developing that kind of mutual love and respect for each other. Because we're putting so much focus and endeavour, sorry, brahmacharis and brahmacharinis, I'm not forgetting you two, and also householders, all devotees, somehow in their consciousness are thinking of ways through which to forward the Krishna consciousness movement and share this with others. That's part of one of the qualities of devotee. But if we do that at the expense of just completely neglecting cultivating relationships with each other, then what in practical terms have we got other than a philosophy to share with other people? If we cannot bring people here and show, what beautiful loving exchanges we share, what a kind of level of love and respect that we have for each other that isn't found elsewhere, that's the thing that will really attract people's hearts and, make them want to stay. So just in that regard, you've probably heard it, but it's a nice story that illustrates the point. It's that story of how there was one monastery that was in decline, and all the monks were beginning to lament because, it was just pretty dead in the temple. And the chief abbot went to see their guru, and it was, asking him, what's wrong? Have we committed some offence that, our monastery is just in such decline? And the the guru was very wise and he said, yes, you have committed the offense of ignorance because you were ignorant that the Messiah is one among you. And the abbot was very surprised by this and went back and shared this to the monks, that the guru has spoken that the Messiah is one among us. So all the monks began to contemplate, no, he couldn't be one among us, you know, could it, you know, couldn't be like back to birth, he couldn't be the Messiah, but, you know, he could be. And in this way, they began to see each other in a different light and appreciate the good qualities that were there in each other and really began to respect and honour each other. And through that mutual love and respect and honouring and serving each other, the whole atmosphere in the temple changed. And then people began to come and visit, and what they saw inspired their hearts so much that the temple just began to flourish and grow through that one simple process and that one piece of wisdom of the guru that taught them the proper mood of respecting each other. So just always remember, you know, Prabhupada said that this purity is the force, practicing the process very nicely and just in endeavouring these three things to serve the devotees, chanting the holy names and trying to become an instrument of the Lord's mercy and compassion in this world. So I'll end here. There's a few minutes if anyone's got any questions or comments for discussion.